sister, listening tensely for the cues that would mean Shakoa hadn't been fooled by the trick. Bink brushed herself off and drifted farther into the crowd, murmuring her assurances to the anxious people around her that she was fine. Someone handed her Tavia's floppy hat as she passed. She smiled her thanks and set it carefully onto her head.
"You okay?" Shakoa said gruffly from behind her.
Bink tensed.
"I'm fine," Tavia said, sounding breathless. "Whew, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to grab you like that."
"It's okay,"
Shakoa said. His voice was still gruff, but Bink could hear that that growl was coming from embarrassment, not suspicion.
"Stupid clumsy oaf of a Wookiee. Did he hurt you?"
No, I'm fine,"
Tavia said again.
"I thought for sure he was going to run me straight down."
"It's okay now,"
Shakoa said, and Bink could visualize him taking her arm and pulling her gently but firmly back to his side. Somewhere in the near distance, audible over the roar of the crowd and the hissing of the various flame jets, came the sound of crashing tableware.
"Uh-oh, sounds like someone's going to have some cleanup to do,"
Tavia commented.
"I guess Wookiees aren't the only clumsy oafs here today."
The words were barely out of her mouth when two more crashes sounded across the grounds, each of them coming from a different direction. A half second later, an even louder crash echoed off the mansion wall, this one accompanied by a woman's or child's scream.
"That's not someone being clumsy," Shakoa bit out. "Come on."
Out of the corner of her eye, Bink saw them head off quickly in the direction of the latest crash, disappearing within seconds into the crowd. She smiled tightly to herself as she made a more leisurely departure from the area. So much for her worries that something had gone wrong. The plan was back on schedule. Chewbacca and Tavia had done their jobs, and from the ever-growing cacophony of crashes, screams, and shouts, it was clear that Kel and Zerba had done theirs. Time for Bink to do hers. The others would be waiting for her at the garage door. Picking up her pace, wondering just how big a mess the droids were making, she headed north. Deja had never been hit by a Fallen before, and if Kazadi's slap was a representative sample of their work, he was pretty sure he never wanted to be hit by one again. That single blow was still throbbing through his cheek, his head, and most of the upper half of his body. But the residual effects from the slap paled in comparison to the mental dizziness that had been created by the revelations ricocheting across his brain. A cryodex. So that was how Shizor had encrypted his blackmail files. Imperial Intelligence had managed to collect alleged bits of those files over the years, but had never been able to crack the encryption or even to figure out how it was done. There were many analysts, in fact, who flatly rejected the idea that those bits were genuine Black Sun files and assumed they were simple disinformation designed to keep intelligence running in loops. A cryodex explained everything. And if the blackmail files, why not other sensitive information? In fact, why not the whole Black Sun information network? Deja wrinkled his nose. Intriguing, but highly unlikely. There might yet be other cryodexes still floating around, any of which could instantly slice the unsliceable code. Shizor was far too smart to put too many hatchlings in the same basket. But even if it was just the blackmail files, getting a hold of that cryodex would be a major accomplishment. Especially now that most of the remaining models were part of the expanding dust cloud that had once been Alderaan. Deja had no idea how Inger's team had gotten hold of Azeel's device, but he had no intention of letting Kazadi or anyone else kick it back into the shadows. Assuming, of course, that the device he'd left Kazadi holding was indeed the real cryodex. Mentally, he shook his head. He was with Villachor on this one. Stealing Azeel's cryodex or duplicating it both seemed to be at roughly the same level of impossibility. The whole thing was smelling suspiciously like a con man's shell game, and until he knew which shell the real cryodex was under, there was no point making any moves. Except, of course, for the first move in any and all future plans, which was to get free of Kazadi's thugs.
Get in!
One of the thugs growled as the turbolift door slid open. Hunching his shoulders in the very image of demoralization, Deja obeyed. The guards joined him, and they headed up. Holodrama writers, Deja had noticed over the years, had a strange fascination with turbolifts. They especially liked casting such places as the perfect spot for a captured hero or heroine to burst into action against evil captors, using hands or feet or concealed weapons to render their opponents dead or unconscious, usually before they even reach their designated floor. Maybe it was the drama of the close quarters that the producers liked. Or maybe it was simply that turbolift fights required no set dressing and left minimal damage to clean up afterward. It was, of course, ridiculous. Those close quarters meant there was nowhere a would-be escapee could run to, along with the added disadvantage of having to fight an entire circle of enemies at the same time. The lack of furniture or decoration meant no impromptu weapons close at hand. There was also no telling what kind of setting or situation the turbolift door would open up on. Even if the hero made it through all that, a turbolift car had no place in which to hide the bodies. Finally, the fact that the bad guys watched those same holodramas meant that they fully expected trouble to break out in turbolift cars. As a result, guards had a tendency to press even more closely around a prisoner in such a setting, their senses alert to any sign of trouble. Unfortunately for them, the fact that they were watching for signs of impending violence tended to make them oblivious to everything else, which made turbolifts the ideal place for a prisoner to pick his binders. Deja had his unfastened by the time the door slid open on the fourth floor.
"Where are we going?" he asked, peering nervously out through the opening. The hallway was exquisitely decorated, with potted plants and expensive artwork along the walls, a thick carpet on the floor, and a molded, glitter-coated ceiling above them.
A guest floor, undoubtedly, with Kazadi and his guard contingent probably the only current residents. Several of the doors lining the hallway stood open, but there was no one in sight.
"To your own personal hell,"
one of the guards answered, giving him a shove out of the car.
"Move!"
Turbolift cars were rotten places to pick a fight. Turbolift car doorways, on the other hand, were ideal. The nearest open door led into a sleeping room that was even more nicely furnished than the hallway. The walk-in closet had a lock, but there was enough room on the far side of the massive bed for both of the bodies. Deja paused long enough to relieve the late guards of his appropriated comlink and holocamera, then headed back to the turbolift. It would have been nice to take one of their blasters, too, but he wouldn't put it past Kazadi to have all his guards' weapons track-chipped. Once the alarm went up and the hunt began, there was no point in making it too easy for them to find him. The original plans for the governor's mansion had included a roof stairway beside the dumbwaiter shaft that led up from the kitchen in the building's central section. There was a chance Villachor had sealed it up as unnecessary and a possible security risk, but it was worth a try. To his mild surprise, the stairway was still there, its entrance concealed behind an impressive four-panel wall painting. He got the door open and slipped inside, closing the painting behind him as best he could. Rooftops were traditionally a bad place for a fugitive to be trapped, especially rooftops high enough that jumping would almost certainly lead to death or serious injury. But his escape probably would be discovered within a very few minutes, and the same logic that argued against rooftops as a hiding place should send Villachor's searchers running off to check all the other likely places first. At the very least, it should buy Deja a little more time. And right now, time was what he needed most. Taking the stairs as quietly as he could, he pulled out his comlink. He only hoped his call wouldn't be too late. He only hoped his call wouldn't be too late.
Chapter 19.
Across the darkening grounds came the sound of crunching wood.
"There,"
Taub said, pointing in that direction.
"There goes another one."
"Sounds like a maintenance droid kicking over a bench,"
Manning added.
"Yes, make that an affirmative. Tallboy's heading over to try to tackle it."
With an effort, Villachor held on to what was left of his patience. A few malfunctioning droids and his so-called professional security men were panicking.
"We have tech people for this," he growled, spinning around and heading back toward the open doorway behind him. "Call them!"
"No," Kazadi's voice came from inside the doorway. Villachor stopped, swallowing a curse.
"They're malfunctioning droids, Your Excellency," he bit out. "It happens all the time. Probably a frequency bleed through between motivators and..."
"Or a deliberate attack,"
Kazadi cut him off.
"Your security chief himself seems to think so."
Villachor frowned.
"What?"
"He comes to you now,"
Kazadi said. Villachor turned back around. Sure enough, Shikoa had appeared from the edge of the crowd and was hurrying toward him, his hand locked around the wrist of a young woman in a red dress as he half-pulled, half-dragged her behind him. And there was definitely a hard set to his face. Villachor bared his teeth. Treason and betrayal all around him. Prisoners who might hold the key waiting to be interrogated. And all of these fools could worry about were a few rampaging droids. But Kazadi was concerned, and Kazadi was the one calling the shots. All Villachor could do was get the mess fixed as quickly as possible and get back to the real issues.
"It's the droid, sir,"
Shikoa said as he came up to them.
"Serving and maintenance both."
"Yes, I can hear them,"
Villachor snarled as another crash and startled scream came from somewhere to the northwest.
"I've already called Purvis. If there's a programming glitch, he'll fix it."
"I don't think it's a glitch,"
Shikoa insisted.
"I think this is a deliberate diversion. My men are already stretched thin, and this is distracting them even more.
Shikoa!"
Villachor snapped, feeling a surge of horror and fury. "The man's neck!
Your key pendant!"
Shikoa's free hand went to his throat, his eyes widening in the same horror as he touched the spot where the pendant should have been. Then, with a curse, he hauled the woman around in front of him.
"Where is it?"
he bit out as she stumbled to a halt between him and Villachor.
"Curse you, where is it?"
"Where's what?"
she protested, shrinking back from his glare.
I don't know what you're talking about."
Shikoa swore again and shoved her toward Taub.
"Hold her,"
he ordered, as he dug into his pocket and pulled out his glow rod. Spinning the selector to ultraviolet, he grabbed the woman's right hand, pulled it close, and turned the light on it. Villachor took a step closer and peered down at the hand. Nothing. Just plain skin. The calcium in her fingernails glowing the usual white, with no signs anywhere of tracking dye that coated all the key pendants. Shikoa flashed Villachor an unreadable look, dropped the girl's right hand, and tried the UV light on her left. Still nothing.
"And?"
Kazadi prompted from inside the doorway.
"She took it,"
Shikoa said blackly.
"I don't know why there's no dye, but I know she took it."
He dropped her hand, all but throwing the arm back to her side.
"Maybe we..."
He grabbed her left hand again, this time turning it so that he could look closely at the undersides of the fingernails. He swore under his breath and swapped it out for her right hand, giving that set of nails the same scrutiny.
"Finger snips?"
Villachor asked. Again, Shikoa flung the woman's hand back at her.
"She must have gotten rid of them somehow,"
he growled.
"What are you talking about?"
the woman demanded.
"Look, I don't want to bring any trouble on you people, but enough is enough. I have rights, and I don't have to..."
"Shut up!"
Shikoa cut her off. He turned and looked out over the crowd, reaching for his comlink clip.
"Castoni should be the closest. I'll have him take her inside and do a complete search."
"No,"
Kazadi said calmly.
"I will take her."
Villachor turned, frustration surging through him.
"With all due respect, Your Excellency, you have other prisoners to interrogate,"
he said as civilly as he could.
"Prisoners we know are involved."
"She's involved too,"
Shikoa insisted.
The others will keep, Mr. Villager,
Kazari said.
But this one's a female. We Folin have a certain way with females.
Villager looked at the woman. Her face had gone rigid.
Anything you want to tell us?
He invited. She swallowed.
I have nothing to do with whatever it is you're talking about, she said firmly. I came here today to honor Moving Fire, and...
Take her inside, Shakoa,
Villager said, jerking his head toward the door.
If His Excellency wants her, His Excellency can have her.
Yes, sir.
Shakoa took her wrist, and once again half-pulled, half-dragged her to the door and the waiting Faline.
And then pull some men from the grounds and do a sweep of the mansion,
Villager called after him.
Starting with the prisoners.
Yes, sir.
Villager turned back to the grounds, snarling under his breath at each distant crash or thud or scream. Apparently, Quirv's boss wanted his people back. Time to see just how big a price he was willing to pay for them.
They've taken her inside.
Rochelle's tense voice came from Lando's comlink.
Someone in there took her. I couldn't see who it was.
Lando gazed across the darkening grounds, ducking reflexively as a spiraling fireball overhead briefly lit up the area.
I'll lay you odds it was Kazari, he said. At least I hope so.
You hope so? Lando, do you have any idea what Faline do to women?
Yeah, I've heard the stories. I'm hoping he's got it because I figure he's got Han, too. And we know where Han is.
Maybe. If Winter was right about the smoke.
I haven't seen her wrong yet. And begging a cigar from someone just so we could send a few puffs into a skylight is exactly the sort of thing Han would do.
Fine. You just better get in there and get them both out. And fast.
As fast as we can. Give me the signal.
Right. Just watch yourselves. And don't forget Dozer's running with the Zeal. They're almost as bad with men as they are with women.
We'll be careful.
He keyed off and looked at the sky. Night was rapidly falling, with the main fireworks display no more than half an hour away. They had to get this thing done before then. Only he and Chewbacca couldn't move. Not yet. Not until Bink had the others safely inside the vault. For her sister's sake, Bink had better be on schedule. Kel and Zerbo were waiting near the garage door when Bink arrived.
You get it?
Kel asked. Bink nodded, reaching into her mouth and retrieving the key pendant from where she'd concealed it under her tongue. The tracking dye tasted exactly the way it smelled, only stronger.
Nice work with the droids, by the way, she said, as they hurried to the door and went through.
Beyond was a plain tan-colored service corridor.
Where to?
Droid repair room is this way,
Kel murmured, heading off down the service corridor.
Droid control and operations are typically bundled into the same area.
Go ahead,
Bink said to Zerba, pulling at the ceiling strips of her brown dress.
I'll catch up.
Right,
Zerba said, pulling a holdout blaster from his belt.
Lightsaber?
Bink pulled up the hem of her skirt and unstrapped the lightsaber from her inside calf. She handed it to Zerba, accepted the blaster in exchange, and as he trotted down the corridor after Kel, she returned to the task of getting rid of her dress. It wasn't the same easy tearaway material as the red dress that she'd worn on top of it, but Zerba had at least made sure there were no complicated hooks, laces, ties, or any of the other annoyances often associated with this class of dress. Within a minute, she had the dress off and the tools and other bits of equipment fastened to her lower legs back to more convenient spots on belt and hip. Her last task was to embed the key pendant in a glob of rock putty, open the door a crack, and toss the putty to the ground beside the door. Now, whenever Lando was ready to make his move, he could get inside without having to bully some security man into unlocking the door for him. she was less than 2 minutes behind the others. But those 2 minutes had made all the difference in the universe. Just beyond the droid repair room, she spotted a door with a long, black-edged slice cut into it. Wincing, she hurried over and looked through the crack. It was the droid control room, all right. Its walls lined with controls, computer consoles, and status displays. Kel and Zerba were inside, moving around and between three unmoving bodies sprawled on the floor near various chairs. Grimacing, she eased the door open and went in. Zerba spun around as the door opened, his holdout blaster tracking toward her. He lowered the weapon again as he saw who it was.
"What kept you?" he asked.
"You tried getting out of one of those dresses,"
she countered, nodding back toward the door.
"I never realized lightsabers made that much of a mess."
"Mine does,"
Zerba said, still sounding a little annoyed.
"Why do you think I didn't want to use it on the outside door? Come here, tell me what I need to do."
"Probably nothing,"
Bink said, gingerly stepping over one of the bodies.
"I hope you remembered Han's order not to kill anyone if we could avoid it."
"Don't worry, they're just stunned,"
Kel assured her.
"I think this is the Zed console over here, but it looks pretty solid."
"Not a problem,"
Bink said, glancing over the console Zerba was standing beside.
"Zerba, that keypad there. Enter 8 or 9 numbers. Any 8 or 9 will do. Then repeat 3 or 4 times."
"Right,"
he said, and got to work. She crossed to Kel's console, a more heavily armored version of Zerba's.
"Same thing,"
she told him, pointing to one of the keypads.
"Zerba, toss me that lightsaber, will you?"
"I'll do it,"
Zerba said. He keyed in one final number and then walked over to them, pulling his lightsaber from his belt.
"Sorry, but it's temperamental enough as it is. What do you need?"
"A small cut right here,"
she said, running her finger along one of the rear connections.
"About 3 centimeters long, and don't cut any of the wires behind it."
"Got it."
He ignited the lightsaber, which gave a gurgly sort of hissing that didn't sound a thing like the ones in the old holodramas. The blade didn't look like anything she'd ever seen either. A sort of sickly yellow that was no more than 14 or 15 centimeters long.
"I know,"
Zerba growled as he positioned it carefully at the spot Bink had indicated. He probably found himself apologizing for the weapon a lot. Still, useless as it would be in a fight, it was perfectly adequate for what she needed. The tip of the blade cut easily, if noisily, through the metal, leaving another blackened scar like the one on the door.
"Good," she said. "Close it down. Let's get out of here."
"You figured out a spot where we can go to ground?"
Kel asked as they crossed back to the door.
"I think so,"
Bink said, easing the door open and looking out. The corridor was still deserted.
"Service stairs, 20 meters that way, and up to the second floor."
"Wait a second,"
Kel said, pulling a flat disc from his pocket and gazing up at the ceiling.
"Any idea where the intercom and alarm wires would be?"
"What in space do you need those for?"
Bink asked.
"That's right. You don't know,"
Kel said.
"Lando called while you were chatting up Shakoa. Villachor grabbed Han when he came in earlier."
Bink felt her breath catch in her throat.
"What? Oh, bloody."
"It's okay. We've got a plan,"
Zerba hastened to assure her.
"We'll clue you in later."
"Right now, we need an excuse for Lando to come in and make some noise,"
Kel said.
"That's this."
He wiggled the disc. Bink clenched her teeth, running a practiced eye over the top of the door. If the system was laid out like they usually were...
"Probably there,"
she said, pointing at the right-hand upper corner of the door.
"That should be one of the Nexus points, anyway."
"Good enough." Straining to his full height, Kel pressed the disc into place against the wall. "Okay, let's go."
Bink nodded, frowning back over her shoulder at the disc as she again started down the corridor.
"What does it do?"
"Absolutely nothing," Kel said. "But they won't know that."
"We should be quiet now, right?"
Zerba suggested. Bink nodded. She had a lot more questions, but they would have to wait. The service stairs opened up into a gorgeous hallway, and as Bink led the way across the thick carpet, she decided that this was, without a doubt, the nicest target she'd ever hit.
"Where are we going?" Kel murmured.
Bink smiled. They had secrets? Fine. So did she.
You'll see.
"What do you mean they're gone?" Villachor demanded. "Both of them?"
"Yes, sir,"
Castoni said, his tone one of barely controlled fury.
"And two of Master Kazadi's guards are dead. Looks like our Glitterstim peddler is more than a typical drug dealer."
Villachor squeezed his comlink hard enough to hurt. That or they'd had help from whoever had stolen Chikoa's key pendant.
"Find them,"
he ordered, his own anger and frustration dropping to a quiet simmer. Overt fury would only keep him from thinking clearly, and that was the last thing he could afford.
"Pull as many men off ground patrol as you have to, but find them."
"Sir, they're probably already off the grounds.
If they are, we'll deal with them later," Villachor cut him off. "You concentrate on making sure they aren't hiding somewhere in my house. Is that clear?"
"Yes, sir."
Villachor keyed off, snarling a curse under his breath, and keyed for Chikoa.
"The prisoners are loose," he said when the other answered.
"Yes, I just heard,"
Chikoa said grimly.
"I've sent Castoni 5 more men, and I'm trying to pull enough guards from the grounds to put one on every door."
"Good," Villachor said. "Make it clear that no one goes in or out without my express order."
"Yes, sir. Do you want me to assign a couple more men to you?"
"You mean in case they catch Manning and Tob napping like they did Master Kazadi's late guards?"
Villachor said acidly.
"I think that very unlikely."
"Yes, sir. If they're still here, we'll find them."
Han had rearranged the snacks and drink bottles on the tray for probably the 7th time, and was wondering how much farther he should try to press his luck, when he heard the soft sound of multiple footsteps coming his way down the hallway. He froze, one of the apples still in his hand. Then, deliberately, he set it back on the tray and began once again moving the items back onto the sideboard. If whoever it was decided to take a closer look, he decided, the tray itself would be his best bet. He could swing it at whoever was first in line, flinging its current contents into the guard's face, then try to get to the second guard fast enough to hit him with the tray itself. The footsteps got closer, and passed the door without slowing. Han took a deep breath, some of the tension fading. That had been close. He frowned, taking another deep breath. Wafting in from the hallway was a faint but highly distinctive scent. The perfume Bink and Tavia had both been wearing this morning. He was at the door in 3 quick strides. Sure enough, hurrying quietly down the hallway were Bink, Kel, and Zerba. At least he assumed it was Bink.
"Bink!"
he stage whispered, slipping out into the hall and heading after them. All 3 spun around, their blasters spinning toward him as well. All 3 sets of eyes widened as they saw who it was. Bink beckoned him urgently forward, her gesturing hand shifting to a warning finger across her lips. Han nodded. He'd already figured out that part. The 3 of them had stopped in front of a plain metal door by the time Han caught up to them.
"We thought you were a prisoner,"
Kel whispered, as Bink crouched down by the door with her lockpick.
"I was,"
Han whispered back, eyeing the electrical closet sign on the door.
"There gonna be enough room in there for all of us?"
"Easily,"
Bink assured him. There was a soft click, and the door popped open.
"Inside, quietly."
Han had seen electrical closets before. In fact, he'd spent a fair amount of time hiding in such places off and on over the years. But he'd never seen one nearly this big. It was a good 2 meters square, with a ceiling that was pushing 3 meters, and there were a dozen 20-centimeter diameter cables running vertically along the back wall.
What are they powering, a Star Destroyer?
He muttered, looking at the massive cables.
Close,
Bink murmured. She had her synth rope dispenser out and was fastening the end of the cable to a small glob of rock putty.
These are the cables from the generator in the north sub-basement to the south section umbrella shield projectors on the roof.
Unfolding a small slingshot, she fired the rock putty at one edge of the ceiling, the dispenser feeding a thin line of synth rope behind it.
Kel, that one's yours,
she said, cutting the line with her finger snips and refitting the dispenser with more rock putty.
Give it a 10 count, then hook in your belt link and go all the way to the ceiling.
By the time the putty was solid enough for Kel to start pulling himself up, she had 2 more lines in place.
I guess you and I are going to have to share one,
Bink said, slipping out of her climbing belt and handing it to Han.
Ever had someone sit in your lap 2 meters off the ground?
Not lately,
Han said as he fastened the belt around his waist. By the time he was ready, Kel and Zerba were all the way up at the ceiling, their bodies pressed flat against the ceramic.
What do we do if they look up?
Got it covered,
Bink assured him. She stepped over to him, threaded the synth rope through the belt link, then turned around and backed way too cozily against him.
You want to operate it? She asked. Or shall I?
I'll do it,
Han growled, feeling an unexpected flush of annoyed embarrassment. Whether she'd meant it that way or not, there was a time and a place for flirting, and this was neither. Finding the control, he sent them swinging up off the floor as the belt reeled in the line. A few seconds later, the two of them were pressed against the ceiling between Kel and Zerba.
Now what?
Han asked.
Take this,
Bink said, handing him a thick, hand-sized piece of something that felt like the silk Zerba had used to make the women's tearaway outfits. In the center of one side was a flexible, finger-sized ring.
Get a grip on the ring, hold it beneath you, and slip off the loop that's around the edge. And don't drop it.
Lowering his hand, Han did as instructed, and jerked in surprise as the material unfolded outward in all directions, each edge expanding until it ran into the wall on that side.
Chameleon cloth,
Bink explained.
Instant wall or ceiling in a handy carry size.
Won't they notice the ceiling's lower than it's supposed to be?
Kel asked.
People never know how high ceilings are supposed to be,
Bink said with a shrug.
You two, get a grip on the edges and stabilize it. Great. Now all we have to do is wait for the searchers to pass this part of the...
She broke off as a soft click came from below them. A second later, the door was flung open and a glow rod flashed, its light flickering faintly across the edges of the chameleon cloth as whoever was below waved it around the room. Han tensed, waiting for the inevitable shout of discovery. And then, without any such shout, the door was slammed shut. Bink gave it a full 20 count before she spoke again.
And then we'll be almost ready to go,
she finished.
Not quite, Zerba said, pulling out his comlink. I have to call Rochelle and give her the go-ahead.
The go-ahead for what?
Han asked.
After you were grabbed, we decided we couldn't afford to let Bilichor figure out the droid thing by himself,
Zerba explained.
So Lando's going to help.
Lando?
Yep, Zerba said. Too bad we'll miss his performance. It should be the crowning point of his career.
Really? Han asked, frowning. What's he going in as?
The last thing you'd expect,
Zerba said, and Han could visualize him smiling in the darkness.
He's going as someone respectable.
Chapter 20.
Lando had never liked Bink's idea of hiding in an electrical closet. He'd liked it even less as the afternoon wore on into evening, and first Han and then Tavia were grabbed. Marblewood security would be on an even higher alert after all that, and having had the chameleon cloth demonstrated for him hadn't helped his doubts. So when he finally got Rochelle's call, it was with both relief and a fair bit of surprise. And there was even a bonus on the relief part.
"And Han is with them?" he asked, just to make sure.
"Unless Zerba messed up with the tap code," Rochelle said. "He didn't send any details, but if Han had been hurt, I think he would have said something."
"Probably."
So Han had gotten loose on his own.
He should have guessed they couldn't hold him for long. "What about Tavia?"
"No word. But if Kazadi has taken over, and we've certainly given him enough reasons to do so, it's likely that both she and Han would have been taken to wherever he set up shop. Zerba has confirmed that those puffs of smoke we saw were a signal from Han, so Tavia's probably in that same area."
"It's the place to start, anyway," Lando agreed,
peering around the corner of the portable refresher station at the garage door 50 meters away. One of Villachor's men had taken up position there, his spine straight and stiff, his head moving back and forth as he continually scanned the area around him. Villachor and Kazadi were jumpy, all right. Time to push them over the edge.
"Okay, I'm going in," he said. "Tell Chewie and Inja the door should be clear in a couple of minutes."
"Got it. Good luck."
Lando keyed off the comlink and put it away, moving back around the side of the refresher and glancing casually around. Villachor's techs and security men had chased down most of the scrambler-rigged droids that Kel and Zerba had turned loose, but there were still enough of them running around to give an edge of distracted concern to the otherwise festive crowd. Between that and the fire jets and fountains still going off all over the grounds, there wasn't a lot of attention left to spare for someone like Lando just standing quietly off to the side. Bracing himself, he pulled out Zerba's egg and squeezed the activator. He'd expected to feel a shock or a jolt as the silk outer clothing was ripped away into the egg. But there was barely a whisper of sensation. A neat trick, Lando decided, and one he'd have to look into for future use. He took a moment to examine the Iltar City police uniform he was now wearing, brushed off a piece of silk debris that somehow had come loose during the ripping process, and pulled out the flattened cap tucked into the tunic. He settled the cap on his head, making sure the bill was pulled down low over his eyes, and sent one final hope skyward that the gadget Bink and Tavia had planted to mess up the cam droids had done its job. It wouldn't do to have the guard over there recognize him as the same man who'd brought in a contraband cryodex for his boss to look at. Taking a deep breath, stiffening into the arrogant official posture he'd seen way too many times on police and security officers, he rounded the corner of the refresher station and strode toward the garage door. The guard's first reaction as he spotted the approaching figure was to slip his hand beneath the edge of his tunic toward his concealed blaster. His second reaction, as a flame jet across the grounds briefly lit up the scene and Lando's uniform, was not to budge a single centimeter from that pose.
"What do you want?" he called.
"Sergeant Emil Talbot, Iltar City Police," Lando said curtly. "I need to check out an emergency call we've received from someone inside."
Another flame jet went off somewhere behind him, this one a whistling spiral, and in the light, Lando saw the guard's eyes narrow.
"I'm sorry, officer, but I have orders not to admit anyone without authorization from..."
"It's Sergeant, not officer, and I don't need your permission to investigate an emergency situation. Someone in your droid control room called in that he was under attack. I was already on the scene, so..."
"The droid room?"
the guard asked, stiffening.
"Yes, the droid room."
Lando jabbed a finger at the door behind him.
"Now you get that door open right now, or I swear to you..."
Yes, of course,"
the guard said, taking a step back and reaching up to his shoulder comlink clip.
"I just need to call it in. Sir, this is Pickwin. I've got an Iltar City police sergeant here who says they've had an emergency call from the droid control room." "Yes, sir. Right away."
He reached behind and opened the door.
"Master Villachor is sending some of our men to check it out," he said.
"I still need to take a look for myself,"
Lando insisted.
"Understood, sir," Pickwin said.
As always, Master Villachor is more than happy to cooperate with the police. If you'll come this way, I've been ordered to escort you to the scene.
Thank you, Lando said. He brushed past the guard and strode through the doorway, pausing just inside to wait for Piquin. The other man followed, closing the door behind him. And just before it shut, Lando caught a glimpse of a pair of figures moving across the grounds toward the door. One of them the size of a normal human, the other the towering bulk of a Wookiee.
This way, sir, Piquin said, heading down the hallway.
Lando followed, resisting the urge to throw a furtive look behind him. If Bink had followed the plan and left her stolen key pendant where Chewbacca could find it, he and Inger should be right behind him. If she hadn't, Lando was on his own.
Confirmed, sir,
Costoni said grimly.
The droid control room was definitely broken into. Probably a plasma torch, though the cut looks a little strange. Three techs are down, including Purvis. The good news is that they were just stunned.
Yes, that's wonderful, Villachor snarled as he glared out across the darkened grounds and the pockets of chaos still rippling through the crowds.
Purvis was the droid chief, with more working knowledge of the cursed machines than any five of Villachor's other men. With him out of commission, the servers and maintenance droids running amok outside would probably have to be taken down one by one.
Why in the hell didn't they call for help? Even a plasma jet would take time to get through that door.
They probably tried. There's something on the wall on the top intercom and alarm lines. Signal damper of some sort, probably.
And they didn't think to use their comlinks instead?
Sure. That's how the cops got wind of it. I'm guessing they couldn't get through to anyone here until it was too late.
Because all the security men had also been on their comlinks, chasing malfunctioning droids and searching for missing prisoners. Villachor glared at a set of flame fountains in the distance, twisting to the rhythms of a song too distant for him to hear.
What about this cop? You check him out?
Yes, sir. Sergeant Emil Talbot. Don't know him personally, but his ID looks good, and he's in the system. Seems to know how to handle a crime scene, too.
Keep an eye on him, anyway,
Villachor ordered, his mind flicking back to the incident at the Lulina Crown Hotel, and how Kazadi had manipulated Villachor's contacts in the police department to bury that investigation.
Is Piquin back on the door?
Yes, sir. I sent him back out as soon as he'd passed Talbot over to us.
Good,
Villachor said. Though there wasn't a single thing that was good about this situation.
I'm sending Shakoa to take over. As soon as he arrives, you and Bromley rejoin your search team.
Yes, sir.
Villachor keyed off, scowling again at the fire-filled darkness, and keyed for Shakoa.
Have you heard anything from Kazadi about Azeel and his cryodex?
He asked, when the other answered.
Not from him, sir, no,
Shakoa said.
But our men at the hotel just reported that Lord Azeel and his guards have left the suite and are heading to the airspeeder garage. I was just about to call you.
Have them follow him,
Villachor ordered. If this was some game Kazadi and Azeel had cooked up between themselves, he wanted to at least have eyes on the situation.
Then get over to the droid control room. We've had a break-in, and I want you to supervise the cop who's come to investigate.
Yes, sir.
Villachor keyed off and sent another glare at the grounds. It would soon be time for the fireworks to begin. Normally, that was the most festive and eagerly anticipated part of the festival. But Villachor wasn't looking forward to it. Not at all. Because a proper fireworks display required him to shut down his umbrella shield. He peered up at the sky. Canceling the display would be a tremendous loss of face in the community. But if Kazadi or Azeel had some kind of aerial attack planned... Fortunately, there was no need to make that decision. Not yet. He could wait until they'd either caught the prisoners or confirmed they'd left Marblewood. And until Shakoa's men found out what Azeel was up to at the Lulina Crown. And he would definitely not make any decisions until Shakoa and Sergeant Talbot found out what the intruders had been doing in the droid control room.
We about set?
Dozer asked.
I think so,
Winter said, lowering her electrobinoculars and giving her eyes a quick rub with her fingertips. Four airspeeders had gone into the Lulina Crown Hotel parking garage. Three others had come out, and between them, she had the procedure and the timing down cold.
We want to start moving as soon as an airspeeder passes the fourth opening from the entryway,
she continued, pointing toward one of the wide vents that lined the garage wall.
That should let us ram into him without giving him enough time to get out of the way, while still making it look like an accident.
And are angles okay?
Winter frowned at him. He'd been staring intently at the garage ever since they arrived, intently enough that she could practically hear the gears turning in his brain.
The angle's fine, she said. We'll hit them from their blind spot, and with the attendant facing the other way for the checkout procedure, he won't see us coming either. You okay?
I'm fine, he assured her. I'm thinking that after we ram them and block this entrance, maybe you should stick around and keep the attendant busy while I go across and block the one on the other side.
I thought you wanted me to come help you.
I don't think I'll need you, he said. You might as well stay at this end where you're out of the way.
Where I'm out of the way? Winter echoed. What's that supposed to...
Here's one.
Dozer cut her off, resettling his grip on the wheel and turning on his lights.
Hang on.
The airspeeder passed the vent Winter had pointed out. She grabbed for her restraints as their vehicle leapt forward, accelerating toward the garage entrance. She tensed reflexively, then forced her muscles to relax. Better chance of escaping injury that way. The target vehicle moved into view past the attendant station and started its leisurely turn into the opening. Dozer accelerated a half second longer, then hit the brakes, as if he'd suddenly noticed the obstacle. With a stomach-churning crash, Winter's whole world seemed to ram itself into her chest, flip itself over her head, and drop like a sack of vegetables onto her shoulders. There was a horrendous screeching of metal and plastic and ceramic that ground across her ears like a rasp file. And then, abruptly, all was silence. Winter blinked twice, and with the second blink, her confused world abruptly resolved itself. The airspeeder was canted to the right at a 30-degree angle and pointed upward, with its nose nearly touching the garage ceiling. Something nearby was hissing. Beneath the hiss, she could hear the faint sounds of people shouting. There were plumes of white smoke everywhere, probably a mixture of coolant from a ruptured turbojet and spray from the airspeeder's fire suppression systems. And Dozer was gone. Winter shook her head, the movement helping clear it, and popped her restraints. If he thought she was going to just sit here, looking helpless, he had some serious rethinking to do. The commotion was even louder and more frantic sounding with the door open, and the air reeked of coolant and fire mist. Winter listened carefully as she rolled out through the opening and eased herself to the floor. But the shouts were more along the line of dismay and fury than of actual pain or injury. At least Dozer had followed that part of the plan correctly. She took a second to confirm that the two airspeeders were indeed completely blocking this entrance, then slipped away through the smoke. Staying low behind the neat rows of parked vehicles, she headed for the entrance at the hotel's opposite side. The attendant at the booth was gazing anxiously across the floor at the smoking wreck, but was making no move to head over to help. He probably had strict instructions to stay at his post no matter what, Winter guessed. Though that would probably change when the biggest vehicle in the garage came roaring at him, did a half flip, and wedged itself solidly across his entrance. There were, Winter saw, three perfect candidates for the job, all of them within four rows of the entrance. Dozer wasn't at any of them. For a moment she leaned back against the last of the big airspeeders, breathing in the faint fumes drifting across the garage from the fire mist, her pulse thudding loudly in her ears. What the hell was he up to? All Lando had asked them to do was keep Azeel from bringing the real cryodex to Kazati. Unless Dozer had decided to get creative. Sure enough, she found him at the rear of the garage, lying on his back beneath one of Azeel's four black landspeeders.
What are you doing?
She demanded as she knelt down beside him.
About time you showed up, he said with a grunt. You're the one with the insane eye for detail. Is there a particular one of these that Azeel usually rides in?
go, sir.
I know. He cut her off. Yell at me later. Right now, just tell me which one is his.
Swallowing a word that had once got both her and Leia in trouble, Winter looked at the landspeeders. The small, minor marks.
That one,
she said, pointing to the one to Dozer's right.
They line them up in random order when they travel, but he always rides in that one.
I knew it, Dozer said,
grunting again as he pulled himself out from under the landspeeder and slid under the one Winter had identified.
These guys are always so predictable.
Sure,
Winter said.
Speaking of insane eyes, are you completely out of your insane mind? Azeel could be here any minute, and you're trying to hotwire his landspeeder?
Not trying,
Dozer corrected, his voice punctuated by the click of tools.
Anyway, we all agreed the blackmail files are worth a whole lot more if we have a cryodex to go with them, right?
Winter felt her mouth drop open.
Are you insane?
You already asked me that, Dozer reminded her. Here, peel the insulation off the ends, will you?
A small finger-sized cylinder rolled out from under the airspeeder.
Dozer, you're not thinking this through,
Winter persisted, crouching down and starting to pull the insulation off the ends of the wires sticking out from one end of the cylinder.
Do you even have a blaster? Because I don't.
Don't need a blaster, Dozer said.
There was a double clink as he tapped one of his tools against the edge of the vehicle's frame.
I've got this. You finished that yet? Great. Thanks.
Winter rose into a low crouch and peered across the landspeeder's hood at the bank of turbolift doors along the wall.
How long is this going to take?
Not long,
Dozer said, the last word coming out as a grunt.
I just have to bypass the security system, which is absurdly easy. Black Sun really needs to invest some credits in a real system. And then hook up the remote? I'll be finished in no time.
Across the garage, one of the turbolift doors slid open.
I hope you're right,
Winter murmured urgently.
Because here they come.
I don't know,
Castoni said, looking back and forth across the monitors and keypads.
I'm sure they changed some settings somewhere. Why else would they come in here? But I haven't got a clue which ones.
We're gonna need a tech,
Lando agreed, pretending to look around. He'd spotted Zerba's sliced console almost as soon as he walked into the room. But, of course, he'd known what to look for. He also knew better than to point it out too quickly.
I've put in a call, but all our techs are scattered across town at the various festival venues. It'll take a while to get anyone back in.
That's okay, the other guard, Bromley, said from across the room. I don't think Master Villachor would want your people poking around here anyway. Our droid master can fix it when he wakes up.
I hope so,
Lando said, glancing casually out the door. And froze. At the far end of the hallway, talking intently toward his comlink clip, as he strode toward the control room, was Shakoa, one of the handful of people in Marblewood who knew Lando by sight. And Lando had suddenly run out of time.
Wait a second, he said, jabbing a finger at the damaged console. That console. See the cut?
Yeah,
Castoni said as he crossed toward it.
Looks like the same whatever they used to slice open the door.
Sure does,
Lando said, joining him and looking over the console itself. There was nothing identifying it as a 501Z control panel, at least nothing he could see. But obviously Bink had figured it out. And if she could, Police Sergeant Talbot certainly could.
Looks like a 501Z control console,
he commented.
You have Zeds patrolling the ground somewhere?
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Castoni's head jerk toward him.
This controls the Zeds?
He breathed.
Oh, hell.
He tapped his comlink clip. Lando held his breath.
Castoni, sir,
Castoni said quickly.
It looks like they hit the Zed control panel. Yes, sir.
He took a step back and craned his neck to look out into the hallway.
Yes, I see him. Master Shakoa,
he called.
Master Villachor wants you.
Castoni stepped into the doorway. Lando turned his back, leaning over the Zed console, pretending to examine the jagged cut Zerba's lightsaber had made. Behind him, the two men conversed in low tones, and though Lando couldn't make out the words, he could hear the shift in Shakoa's tone as he stopped talking to Castoni and started talking to Villachor. The conversation ended, and Lando heard footsteps heading rapidly away.
"Gone to check on your Zeds?"
Lando asked over his shoulder.
"Yeah, if they're still there,"
Castoni growled, coming up beside him.
"You cops know any fast ways to bring someone out of a stun blast?"
Bromley asked.
"Some drug or something we can use?"
"Nothing that would be legal," Lando said.
"Sorry. Here, help me move this other console out of the way, will you? We need to see if they got into the wall conduits, too."
The echo of the hard service corridor gave way to the silence and softer cushioning of the main mansion hallways. Shakoa hardly noticed. So it was the Zeds they'd been after. Criffing obvious in retrospect, especially after Villachor replaced all the armored human guards in the vault with more of the criffing droids, all of which had been Kazadi's idea. Curse the stupid green-scaled falling idiot anyway. Unless it hadn't been stupidity, unless it was part of whatever insane plan Kazadi and Azeel and Quirv, and maybe Prince Criffing Shizor himself had worked up to bring down Villachor and put someone else in his place. Well, they could just dream on. Whatever success the mysterious intruder had managed with the serving and maintenance droids outside, he'd find the Zeds a much harder nut to crack. They were horribly difficult to reprogram or disable, especially without the general access codes that only Villachor and Purvis, the droid chief, had. Once Purvis recovered from the stun blast, he could check on the Zeds and fix any damage the intruder had managed to inflict. In the meantime, Shakoa and Villachor would go into the vault, alone if necessary, and guard the safe and Shizor's precious blackmail files. Unless Purvis was part of the plot. Shakoa glared at the fancy hallway. A nice, complicated festival of four honorings had suddenly become a maze of spinners within spinners within spinners. With Kazadi and his hidden agenda on one end, and someone throwing bribe credits at the Marblewood staff on the other, he no longer had a clue as to whom he could trust.
"Mr. Shakoa?"
Shakoa pulled his lips back in a snarl. He absolutely didn't trust this one.
"What do you want, Barbus?"
he growled, not bothering to turn around or even slow down.
"We have a message from His Excellency,"
Barbus said. There was the soft sound of hurrying footsteps, and Barbus and one of Kazadi's other guards, Narkin, Shakoa tentatively identified him, came up on Shakoa's sides.
"His Excellency requests the pleasure of your presence."
"His Excellency will have to wait," Shakoa told him shortly. "Right now we've got a possible crisis on our hands."
"A crisis for Master Villachor and Marblewood?"
Barbus asked pointedly.
"Or a crisis for Master Lepis Shakoa?"
Shakoa shook his head.
"I have no idea what you're talking about."
"Then let me make it clearer,"
Barbus said.
"The woman you sent to us has been making some fascinating statements to His Excellency. One of those statements is that she can't remember seeing your key pendant for at least an hour before Master Villachor finally noticed it was missing."
Shakoa felt a surge of contempt over his anger.
"And you believed her? A criffing thief, and you actually believed her?"
"Yes, about that,"
Barbus said.
"They've examined her thoroughly and have found nothing. No hint of tracking dye, no finger snips, or even marks where finger snips might have been attached. No weapons, tools, or contraband of any sort. As far as we can tell, she's nothing more than the brainless social floater that she appears."
"Then dig deeper," Shakoa growled. "She's the thief. I know it."
"And His Excellency would be delighted to have you prove that to him,"
Barbus said.
"This should take only a few minutes of your time."
"I don't think so,"
Shakoa said, and stopped dead in his tracks. Barbas and Narkin were caught completely by surprise, each of them taking another step before they could react. They stopped, turned to face Shakoa, and froze at the sight of his drawn blaster.
"Let me tell you what's going to happen," Shakoa said into the taut silence. "I'm going to the vault, and I'm going to confirm that the safe and its contents are secure. After that, if Master Villator feels he can dispense with my services for the few minutes you mentioned, I'll be happy to answer any questions His Excellency has for me."
He lifted the barrel of his blaster a couple of centimeters.
"You can come with me. You can return to His Excellency and wait. Or you can die. Your choice."
"You wouldn't dare,"
Barbas said darkly.
"We have two escaped prisoners, and possibly another intruder inside these walls," Shakoa reminded him. "One of them could easily have picked up a blaster."
Barbas's lips twitched in a small smile.
"Very well. We accept your gracious invitation. After all, the most valuable item in the safe is His Excellency's, so it only makes sense for us to help you secure it."
He gestured down the hall.
"Lead the way."
Shakoa brushed past them, jamming his blaster back into its holster as he did so. Barbas could smile all he wanted, but Shakoa knew the other wouldn't forget this. That was okay. Neither would Shakoa. Azeel's land speeder hadn't been nearly as easy to slice as Dozer had made it sound. Far from it. But he was the best. He was determined, and Black Sun really did need to spend their credits on better security. Still, he could hear the approaching footsteps on the Duracrete by the time he finally finished and rolled across the floor to safety. Winter was waiting for him 5 rows over, crouched behind a classic and lovingly restored Incom T-24.
"Nothing like cutting it straight to the wire," she murmured.
"Keeps the heart pumping,"
he murmured back, peering around the T-24's ventral fin and wondering briefly whether its owner had opted for a decent security system. There were 12 of them striding across the floor, including Azeel. The whole contingent, if Rochelle's earlier estimate of their numbers was correct. Wrapped around Azeel's waist was a hip pouch that presumably held the cryodex.
"What's the plan?" Winter asked.
"First part of every plan is always the same,"
Dozer told her, unfolding the control pad from the remote he'd hooked into the landspeeder system. The timing here was going to be critical.
"You separate the goodies from the people hired to guard them."
"If you mean you're hoping he gets into that airspeeder all by himself, that's not going to happen,"
she warned.
"Back at Marblewood, the driver and two guards always got in the same time he did."
"I know," Dozer said. "We'll just have to do what we can with what we've got."
The first human in line stopped at Azeel's landspeeder and climbed in the driver's door. As he did so, the next man in line passed him and opened the rear passenger door. He climbed in and was followed by Azeel, who was followed in turn by the next man in line. The rest of the guards waited until both doors were closed, then headed toward the other three landspeeders. Straining his ears, Dozer heard the first landspeeder's engine activate. And in that half-second between the activation and the driver keying in his powertrain access, Dozer hit the reroute switch on his pad. With a roar, the engines kicked to full power, keying in the boost and twisting the level control all the way over. Dozer sent the vehicle leaping straight up to slam hard into the Duracrete ceiling. The guards were good, all right. Not a single one of them wasted time gaping at the landspeeder's sudden and inexplicable movement. Instead, all 8 snatched out their blasters and spread out, looking for whoever was responsible for the jacking. A second later, they were scrambling frantically for cover as Dozer dropped the landspeeder squarely into their midst.
"You got one,"
Winter called softly from her new position at the T-24's nose.
"The rest are taking cover between other vehicles."
Where Dozer couldn't get at them. But it was an obvious defensive move, and he'd expected it. All he'd really wanted to do was slow them down and get them reacting instead of thinking. Because it was time now to get them away from him. Lifting the landspeeder back above the general vehicle level, waggling it violently back and forth to keep the passengers flopping around inside. He sent it careening across the garage toward the two-vehicle wreck he and Winter had assembled earlier. With the perfect mix of frustrated anger and unthinking reaction he'd hoped for, the whole batch of guards rose from their hiding spots and tore off after it. Dozer smiled tightly. Perfect. Now all he had to do was keep the vehicle bouncing around enough that the driver couldn't get to the engine kill switch, let the guards go hunt for the jacker, who they naturally assumed was somewhere near the vehicle's endpoint, and then fly it back here. Before the guards could return, he should be able to flip the thing over on its head, pop the door, grab the cryodex from Azeel's pouch while the Fallen and his guards were still too dazed to do anything, and get the hell out of here.
Watch it! Three of them are getting into one of the other land speeders,
Winter warned. Dozer felt his smirk turn into a wince. Okay, so Azeel's guards weren't as dumb as he'd thought. They were hedging their bets, one group handling the ground-level search, while another went airborne, which meant he had less time than he'd thought to finish this up.
Can you hotwire an airspeeder?
He asked Winter.
Probably,
she said, and out of the corner of his eye, he saw her looking around.
Anyone in particular?
Never mind,
Dozer said, backing up to her and thrusting the control pad into her hands.
Forward, backward, sideways, wiggle, boost,
he said briefly, touching each control to identify it.
Keep it over there, and keep it moving.
Dozer?
And if it drops out of the sky, that means the driver's killed the engine, and we give it up and run,
he added, glancing over the nearest parked vehicles. The OS-20, two vehicles over, he decided.
Dozer! Incoming!
He spun back around. A black airspeeder was roaring through the unblocked entrance, with two more hovering in guard positions behind it. The first vehicle stopped just inside the garage as the driver apparently paused to assess the situation.
They're villagers,
Winter said tensely.
The license tags...
Yeah.
Dozer cut her off, snatching back the control pad.
Get us a vehicle. I'll hold him off.
The new arrival finished his assessment, turned toward Azeel's hovering land speeder, and twisted hard to the side, trying to get out of the way as Dozer sent the jacked vehicle shooting straight at him. The other pilot almost made it. Azeel's vehicle caught his fender a glancing blow, bouncing the vehicle into the side wall with a grinding crash. A flicker of motion caught Dozer's eye. Azeel's other land speeder was off the floor now, boosts at full power, heading toward the jacked one. And with that, Dozer's numbers had suddenly gone straight to zero. With two other vehicles in the game, and two more hovering outside, waiting for their chance to join in, it was only a matter of time before they'd be able to box Azeel's jacked vehicle in long enough for the driver to untangle himself from the seats and get to the kill switch. It was now or never.
Cover!
He snapped, and turned the control over hard. The jacked airspeeder reversed direction, slamming again into the newcomer. Dozer switched back to forward motion and ran it straight toward where he and Winter were crouching. Peripherally, he noted that the two vehicles outside had disappeared somewhere. He brought the jacked vehicle almost to them, rammed it one final time into the ceiling, and then flipped it over and sent it crashing to the floor in front of them. He had no idea how long it would take the men and Fallen inside to recover from that double punch. He also had no intention of hanging around long enough to find out. Jumping up from his crouch, he ran to the turtled vehicle, keyed the lock control, and pulled open the door. The landspeeder's interior was nearly as much of a mess as its exterior. Apparently Azeel had a miniature refreshment bar set up for his convenience, the contents of which were now scattered or dripping across the fancy seats. But none of that mattered. All that mattered was that the cryodex was fastened around a dazed Fallen's waist, and there were no blasters pointed at him. Unfastening the hip pouch, Dozer ducked back out and sprinted toward the turbo lifts. No time to get to an airspeeder now, he knew, even if there'd been anywhere to go with it. Their only chance was to try to beat the pursuit out of the garage and to take their chances on the ground. Winter was crouched beside one of the airspeeders, working on the lock. Dozer grabbed her wrist as he passed, yanking her to her feet and dragging her after him. Behind them, the garage exploded with the flash and fury of multiple blaster shots, and Dozer winced as several of the bolts blazed past overhead. He thought about looking back to see how close the pursuit was,
decided he needed to focus all his attention on running. The turbolifts were no more than 30 meters ahead. The doors slid open, all of them at once. With a horrified curse, Dozer stumbled to a halt. In the sudden blink of an eye, the situation had suddenly ended. The game was over, and he and Winter had lost.
Chapter 21.
Villachor had been waiting impatiently in the vault anteroom for nearly 2 minutes before Shakoa finally showed up. Only he wasn't alone. He'd thoughtfully brought guests.
What are they doing here? Villachor demanded. I didn't call for anyone except you.
I didn't call for anyone either, sir, Shakoa growled. They invited themselves, and I didn't think I had time to kill them.
Villachor glared at the two thugs, sorely tempted to order them away and to back up the command with the Zeds currently standing motionless in front of the vault doorway. But Shakoa was right. There would be time to deal with Kazadi's thugs later. With a derisive snort, he turned his back on them. They wanted to watch? Fine. Let them watch. He was still the master of Marblewood, the Marblewood Vault, and everything inside it. And for the moment, at least, there was nothing Kazadi's men, or even Kazadi himself, could do about it. Striding to the key Zed, he held his hand up to the droid's face for the usual scent confirmation. He and Shakoa would go inside, he decided. Double-check that the safe was still secure, and then reconfigure the Zeds inside the vault for possible intrusion. At that point, he could either leave or wait inside with them, and... He frowned. His hand was still in the Zed's face, but the Zed was just standing there.
Smell,
he ordered, moving the hand a little closer. The passcode cologne couldn't have worn off. It never wore off.
I said smell,
he repeated, this time pressing his hand right up to the metal. He barely snatched it back in time as the Zed suddenly came to life, one massive hand reaching for Villachor's arm, the other going for the neuronic whip coiled at its side.
Sir,
Shakoa said, leaping forward.
I know,
Villachor snarled as he hastily backed up out of the whip's range. The Zeds were programmed to react strongly if they were touched. And then the full implications of that reaction turned his blood cold. The intruder had gotten into the Zed programming all right, just like the cop in the droid control room had warned. But he hadn't simply shut all of them down, the way an unimaginative thief would have. Instead, he'd reprogrammed their loyalties, flipping them to his side, so that instead of keeping out intruders, they were keeping out Villachor. There was only one reason to do something that complicated and time-consuming, to buy more time at the other end of the road. The intruder wasn't hoping to break into the vault. He was already inside. With a curse, Villachor yanked out his comlink and punched for Costoni.
Is Purvis awake yet?
He snapped.
I don't know, sir,
Costoni said.
Bromley and two of the techs took him and the others to the infirmary.
Never mind,
Villachor cut him off. So the intruder thought he could turn the Zeds against their master? Fine. Two could play that game.
Go to the Zed control board and pull up the main status page.
Yes, sir.
Villachor motioned Shakoa closer.
You still have men on standby in the ready room?
He asked, keeping his voice low.
Yes, sir. Five of them, Shakoa confirmed. Uziel's in command.
Have them suit up, Villachor ordered. Full gear, and get them down here as quickly as possible.
Yes, sir.
Shakoa touched his comlink clip, his eyes flicking to Kazadi's men standing off to the side.
Sir?
I know, and I don't care, Villachor growled. The intruder's in there, or will be soon, and he's got the Zeds running interference for him, so we take them out of the equation.
Shakoa looked at the double line of Zeds.
Yes, sir,
he said, not sounding all that happy at the idea.
Sir, do you think...
I have the status page, sir,
Costoni cut in.
Go to the code input box at the upper left,
Villachor directed, closing his eyes and visualizing the sequence.
Input the following numbers. 84552.
He ran through the full string, then had Castoni read it back to him.
Good, Villator said. Now hit activate.
May I ask what you're doing, Master Villator?
One of Kazadi's men called.
I'm solving a problem, Villator said, glowering at him. I trust you're not planning to become another one.
No, sir. Not at all.
The man assured him, smiling faintly. But Villator noticed that the smile didn't go all the way to his eyes, and his hand was resting very close to his blaster. It wasn't until the heavy footsteps began thudding along the hallway outside the electrical closet that Han really began to believe that this whole thing might actually work. It was an astonishing thought. Most of the time, he figured his plans for about a 50% chance of success. And even then, only if he scrambled like crazy when the original idea started coming apart at the edges. But this one, for some reason, seemed to be working exactly like it was supposed to. Minus the couple of small side glitches they'd had along the way, of course.
Sounds like five of them,
Bink murmured, her ear pressed to the door.
In a hurry, too.
I guess Han and his magic data card came through, Zerba said.
He seemed even more astonished than Han that the plan was working.
What was on it, anyway?
Just plain simple flux perfume base,
Bink said, sliding a slender optic line under the door and adjusting the eyepiece over her eye.
The kind that adapts to your body chemistry through the day. One touch was enough to get the solvent reagents in the cologne on Villator's hand and alter it just enough to be unrecognizable to the Zeds. Okay. Looks clear.
Han nodded.
I'll go first, he said.
The hallway was indeed deserted. The guards who just thundered past had remembered to lock the ready room on their way out. But it was an ordinary lock, and Bink was through it in seconds. The four of them slipped inside, closing and relocking the door behind them. It was about as close a copy of a standard military ready room as behind them. It was about as close a copy of a standard military ready room as Han had ever seen. Two of the walls were lined with suits of the Zed droid mimicking armor Kel had warned them about, set into the same type of multi-armed self-suit frameworks that Imperial space troopers used to help them get into their armor. The other two walls were given over to clothing lockers, equipment cabinets, and a refreshment sideboard like the one back in the lounge where he'd been hiding out earlier. In the center of the room were a couple of game tables and chairs, with a group of three-tier bunks visible through the open door in a back room.
Where do we start?
He asked Bink. She was crouched between the two tables, holding a small sensor just above the floor.
Right here should do nicely, she said,
drawing a small circle on the thin carpet with her finger.
Zerba?
How deep? He asked, crouching beside her and igniting his lightsaber.
About 10 centimeters,
she said, attaching a hook to the carpet at that spot.
Doesn't have to be precise. There aren't any sensor wires under it.
He nodded and carefully sliced a circle around the hook. He closed down the lightsaber, and she pulled out the plug.
Now, if they've done this properly,
she commented as she inserted the end of her optic line into the hole and moved it around.
They should have a crisscross grid of sensor wires. Yep, there they are. Okay, Zerba, a meter diameter circle from here to here. This deep.
She held up the plug to demonstrate.
This time, neatness counts.
Right.
Igniting his lightsaber again, Zerba got to work. Han looked around the room, suddenly struck by an odd thought. His part of the fieldwork was supposed to have ended with the delivery of the gimmicked data card to Villator. In fact, according to the original plan, he should be in the suite right now, watching the Marblewood grounds with electrobinoculars and helping Rochelle and Winter coordinate the rest of the operation.
Right here, right now, he basically had nothing to do.
His eyes fell on the line of armored suits. Or maybe he did.
Kel,
he invited quietly, walking over to the nearest suit. It didn't look that complicated to get into.
What?
Kel asked, coming up beside him.
You know anything about these?
Nothing specific, Kel said, running his fingers thoughtfully along the metal of the helmet. Full life support, probably. Certainly has motion echo power enhancement, half-face heads-up display, comm capability, and a partial sensor suite. Possibly targeting optics, too.
Thanks, Han said dryly. A shame the kid didn't know anything specific. Give me a hand, will you?
Going someplace?
Bink asked, looking up from Zerba's work.
Thought I'd wander downstairs and see what Villachor's up to, Han told her,
pulling experimentally on the armor's torso. It lifted easily on its counterbalanced self-suit arm.
You three look like you've got this end pretty well covered, don't you?
Pretty much,
Bink said, as she and Zerba lifted out the circle of flooring and set it to the side. Han craned his neck to look into the hole as he worked his left leg and hip into the lower section of armor. Beneath the main floor was a multiple zigzag grid of wires, a couple of centimeters apart, set into a subfloor.
Is that the alarm?
That's it,
Bink confirmed.
A randomized variable pulse flicker field, to be specific. You can put jumpers across the lines all day and still not hit all the combinations.
So what do we do? Kel asked.
We first make sure there aren't any unwelcome surprises waiting for us below, she said,
tapping a part of the subfloor between two of the wires.
Zerba, a hole straight through here, if you please. As small as you can manage.
Zerba nodded and again ignited his lightsaber. This time, instead of cutting with the edge, he carefully pushed the blade straight down into the floor. There was a small jolt as he broke through the other side, and he quickly closed it down.
I guess a lightsaber cuts through mag-sealed armor plate just fine.
Never thought it wouldn't,
Bink assured him. She slipped her optic line into the hole, turned it around a couple of times.
Well?
Han asked. With a puff of exhaled air, Bink pulled out the line and leaned back.
He did it, she announced. Villachor shut down the Zeds for us.
Awfully nice of him, Kel said. What about the alarm?
Patience, child, patience,
Bink said. She took another deep breath, puffed this one out as well, and leaned forward again.
First job is to slow everything down to a manageable rate,
she continued, putting her optic line back into the hole and turning it slowly around.
See, the regulator and randomizer cascade switch for the whole thing are right over there.
She pointed toward the wall beneath the sideboard.
Hitting them in just the right spots will slow the flicker pattern without shutting it down completely, and therefore not trigger any alarms.
You need me to cut you a hole over there?
Zerba asked, starting to get to his feet.
Don't bother,
Bink said. Pulling her holdout blaster from its belly holster, she lowered it into the hole, lined it up carefully with the optic line, and carefully squeezed the trigger. The hole lit up briefly with the shot. Shifting aim slightly, she fired again. Setting the blaster on the floor beside her, she ran her sensor over the zigzag wires again.
Perfect,
she said.
Now what? Zerba asked.
There are a couple of ways of bypassing a grid like this, she said. But they take time, and we're in a hurry. So we're going to be clever.
She nodded back toward the equipment cabinets behind her.
Zerba, go find me one of those neuronic whips, will you?
A neuronic whip?
Zerba echoed, frowning as he stood up. Han glanced at the collection of weapons racked beside his armor. Along with half a dozen blasters were two of the whips.
Here,
he said, detaching one from its peg and tossing it across to Bink.
I can't wait to hear this one.
It's really very simple,
she said as she uncoiled it.
Neuronic whips adapt to the neural characteristics of whatever skin they happen to be touching, right?
Kel's mouth dropped open.
You're joking.
Not at all,
she assured him as she carefully laid out the whip in a circle on top of the wire grid.
It's not fast enough to adapt to a normal flicker field, which is why no one bothers to worry about them. But with the randomizer slowed down, the whip should pick up the incoming pulses and echo them just fine.
Giving the whip's positioning a final adjustment, she reached into the handle and activated the switch. There was a crackle of energy from the whip, accompanied by a flash of blue-white light.
The whip flashed again, then settled down into a flickering blue glow.
And that should be that, Bink concluded.
Do we need to be worried about the should in that sentence?
Zerba asked.
Let's find out.
Bink gestured into the hole.
Make a hole, Zerba. Be sure to stay inside the circle of the whip.
Zerba took it slow and careful, clearly expecting a blare of alarms to go off somewhere midway through the procedure, and just as clearly surprised when they didn't. As he worked, Bink unfolded a small but sturdy tripod lifter and set it up over the hole, and Han could see its legs strain as it slowly took the weight of the section of subflooring and the armor plate beneath it. By the time Kel eased the helmet shut over Han's head, they had the hole cut and the plug ratcheted up, and they were maneuvering the circle of material out of their way.
How's it look? Han asked.
See for yourself.
Bink's muffled voice came faintly through the helmet.
How?
Han growled, glaring at the darkness in front of him. And then, suddenly, the inside faceplate lit up with a view of the room, overlaid with range markings. There was a tiny inset infrared version in the upper right corner, and an equally tiny rear view in the upper left.
That better?
Kel's voice came normally in his ears.
Yeah,
Han said, looking over the display. There was a status bar running along the bottom of the image, marking comm setting, power levels, auditory levels, and advanced sensor options.
Controls should be right here,
Kel said, turning Han's left arm over and indicating the inner wrist area.
You see anything?
I do now,
Han said, smiling tightly. Where he'd seen only bare metal from outside the suit, the heads-up display now indicated a half-dozen buttons and touch sliders. Experimentally, he reached over with his right hand and tapped the telescopic button, then ran the finger along the slider. The image in front of him jumped, zooming in on the controls, the arm, and the section of floor beyond them.
Yeah, got it,
he said, moving the slider back and keying off the telescopics.
Any place in here to put an extra comm link? I'm guessing this one is locked into the security circuit.
Yeah, there should be room right here,
Kel said, touching the helmet behind the right-hand cheek flange.
There's a disguised air intake behind the flange. Let me see if I can wedge mine in there for you. Okay, that should do it. Zerba?
Zerba pulled out his comm link.
Testing.
Got it, Han said.
The sound from the comlink was faint, but as long as it didn't get too noisy outside, he should be able to hear well enough.
Okay, I'm heading down. Good luck with the safe.
Wait a second.
Bink pulled a small comm signaler from her pocket and tossed it to Kel.
As long as you're in an accessorizing mood. Kel, see if you can find a spot for this. No problem. It should fit right below the comlink,
Kel said.
Let me see. There. Right below the comlink, Han. Push it straight forward to trigger.
Wait a second,
Zerba said, frowning at Bink.
I thought you were going to handle that part.
Han's going to be down there watching the show anyway,
Bink pointed out.
You might as well have the honor. Besides, he'll have a better view and angle than I will.
She's right,
Han agreed, looking at the weapons rack. All he needed to complete his new outfit was something that packed the maximum punch at close range. His eyes fell on a Caliban Model 10 heavy blaster pistol. 50 shots fully charged, a 60-meter range, and nearly as powerful as a full blaster rifle. It would do nicely. He slipped the Caliban into his armor's right-hand side holster. Then, almost as an afterthought, he unhooked the other neuronic whip and secured it to his left hip.
Watch yourselves, he said, as he headed out.
You too,
Kel said. A moment later, Han was on his way, clumping down the hallway, a bad feeling tugging at him. This was Bink's part of the operation, and if she pulled it off, it would be the crowning point of her entire career. There was no way in the galaxy she would hand off the grand moment to him. Not unless she had a very good reason to do so. Unfortunately, that reason wasn't hard to guess. The minute she had the safe open, she was going to head across the mansion and find her sister. He muttered a curse,
feeling the breath bounce off his heads-up display back into his lips. Problem was, she'd never make it. Not alone. Absolutely not alone, with the Marblewoods' whole security force stirred up the way they were. The division of tasks in this whole thing had been very clear. Lando and Chewbacca at the mansion's north end would go after Tavia. Bink, Zerba, and Kel at the south end would deal with the safe. That had been the arrangement from the start, and none of Lando's last-minute tweaks had changed it. Bink, apparently, was going to do so anyway, and there was nothing Han could do about it. Not unless they wanted to scratch the job and have all of them troop off after Tavia together. And they'd come way too far for that. All he could do was hope that Bink would calm down and think it through. As long as Kazadi didn't know who was on whose side, or even what the sides were, he would be a fool to push Tavia too hard, especially with the question of the cryodex still up in the air. If Bink would just relax a little, maybe she'd see that she could back off and let Lando and Chewbacca get her sister out. Because if she didn't, they might well wind up with two prisoners to be rescued instead of one. And there was a very good chance that Kazadi would decide he didn't need to keep both of them alive. With a sizzle of old-fashioned chemical propellant, the first of the fireworks shot upward from Marblewood grounds. The propellant burned out, and there was a moment of anticipation as nothing seemed to happen. Then, with a burst of vibrant color, the rocket exploded, shooting tiny stars into the air to soar, swoop, and then fade into oblivion. Sitting against one of the chimney spires where the shadows were the deepest, Deja frowned. Fireworks, he knew, were the traditional finale to the Festival of Four Honorings. But the finale was supposed to wait until full dark, and they still had 15 or 20 minutes until then. Had something else gone wrong? Maybe. On the other hand, maybe someone had noticed that the spate of rampaging droids had threatened to spark a mass exodus of the visitors, and was hoping to stem that flow by starting the fireworks a little early. If that was the plan, it definitely seemed to be working. As a second rocket sizzled upward and then burst, Deja could see that the flow of people toward the exits had slowed as the visitors turned back to watch the show. Only, frowning, Deja broke open his fake holocamera and extracted the knife and the small but powerful electrobinoculars tucked away inside. Slipping the weapon into his sleeve, where it would be handy if he needed it, he activated the electrobinoculars and focused on the low wall surrounding the grounds. According to the faintly glowing indicator lights, Marblewood's umbrella shield was still active. A third rocket exploded overhead, this one spitting its stars into a cerise flower pattern. Leaving the shield up for these smaller ones was all well and good, but the larger, more elaborate fireworks later in the show were designed to travel considerably higher before exploding. If the shield was still up when those were fired, they were either going to spatter early or possibly even ricochet down into the crowd. Maybe Villator already had that covered and would be dropping the shield before the show got to the point of endangering the visitors. Or maybe endangering the visitors was exactly what someone else had in mind. Either way, it would be very interesting to watch. The big round safe was halfway across the room, moving ponderously on its floating platform as Bink slid down through the hole in the ceiling. To her relief, the Zed spaced around the room remained silent and motionless. There'd always be the chance, however slim, that Villator would reconsider his strategy and reactivate them. Watching through the hole above her, Zerba and Kel were almost as silent as the droids. Which was just as well, since Bink didn't feel like talking to anyone right now. Had Han figured it out? Probably. He could be a pretty fair judge of people when he put his mind to it, and he knew her well enough to be able to read her reactions. Of course, just giving him the spare trigger should have been all the hint he'd have needed. But he hadn't done anything to stop her. He hadn't even said anything. Probably had known it would be a waste of time. Because Tavia was in danger.
and Bink was the one who'd put her there. And as much as she liked and trusted Chewbacca, she had no intention of letting him carry the football on this one alone. But first, she had a job to do. If for no other reason, then it would ensure that this was the last time her sister would ever have to be in this kind of danger. She landed with a quiet thump on the floor, glancing once at the doorway and then moving toward the floating safe, studying it as she walked. As Rochelle had described earlier, the platform was slowly rotating as it traced its path around the ballroom. Not very quickly, probably only about once every 3 minutes. Unfortunately, at this point, any rotation was a problem. Their first task, therefore, was to get it stopped. There was a soft thump from behind her, and she looked back to see Kel disengaging from the synth rope.
"Anywhere in particular you want me to start?" he stage whispered.
"You don't need to whisper," Bink told him. "The place is completely soundproof."
Kel glanced up, as if he was going to point out that the open hole above them was most definitely not soundproof. Fortunately, he seemed to think better of it.
"I was thinking we should kill the platform's movement," he continued, in an only slightly louder voice, as he hurried toward her. "Otherwise, the timing..."
"Exactly,"
Bink cut him off.
"Think you can do that without dropping everything?"
Kel nodded.
"No problem."
"Then do it."
He nodded again and strode past her, pulling out his compact toolkit and one of his small detonite charges. Bink watched as Zerba rappelled down, landing with considerably more bounce than either she or Kel had managed.
"You ready?"
she asked.
"Sure," he said, hurrying toward her. "You going to be able to find the door? I'm not crazy about the idea of poking randomly into that thing."
"I wouldn't be crazy about it either,"
Bink said.
"Don't worry. I'll find it."
The stairs unfolded as they approached, just as Rochelle had said they would. Bink climbed up onto the platform and began slowly circling, running her fingers over the surface of the duracrete, looking for the telltale scuff marks Winter had identified. Midway through the operation, she felt the platform come to a smooth halt.
"Got it," Kel called up to them. "I'll start setting the charges."
"Good,"
Bink called back, scowling at the safe. It would be just her luck if she'd started right past the proper finger holes and was going to have to go all 9.5 meters around the edge of the sphere before she found them. But the universe had decided to play nice today. 2 steps later, she spotted the marks. "The finger holes just to the right," Winter had said. Bracing herself, Bink slipped her fingers into the holes. And with a gratifying lack of fuss or bother, the bottom segment folded down, exactly as Rochelle's simulation had shown. Bink stepped to the side, out of the way, as it settled onto the platform, and peered inside. The tunnel had its own lighting system, a set of tiny glow bugs set into the ceiling, with a larger glow panel over the black stone door and the keypad at the far end.
"I hope you're not going to ask me to cut through that," Zerba warned from behind her. "I read up a little on Hijana stone. I doubt my lightsaber can even begin to handle it."
"Wouldn't dream of putting your lightsaber through that,"
Bink assured him, pulling out her sensor and stepping into the tunnel. The spitmitter inside the fake data card had been silent since Villachor shut it up in the safe, its lower power transmitter incapable of punching a signal through both Hijarna stone and mag-sealed vault walls. Batavia had calculated that it should be able to get a signal through the stone if the receiver was close enough to the safe. As usual, she'd been right. The signal was faint, but readable.
"What have we got?" Zerba asked.
"Villachor opened the safe 3 more times in the past 4 days,"
Bink said with satisfaction.
"So 4 total, counting the one when he put it in there?" Zerba said doubtfully. "I don't know. Gotta be tricky to pull a pattern with only 4 points.
"Rochelle and Winter can do it,"
Bink said firmly, backing out onto the platform again.
"Don't you have some work of your own to do?"
"Just waiting until I was sure it wasn't going anywhere,"
Zerba said. He leaned over the edge of the platform.
"Kel?"
"It's not going anywhere,"
Kel confirmed.
"And if we don't get this done before Villachor's men get in, none of us will be going anywhere either."
Point taken,
Zerba said. He peered at the door, then turned his back on it and crouched down beside the short pillar that connected the Duracrete ball to the platform. Igniting his lightsaber, he set to work. Bink took a couple of steps away from him and the hiss of his lightsaber and keyed her comlink. Rochelle picked up almost before the call signal sounded.
Bink?
Yes,
Bink confirmed.
We're ready here. Can you get Winter hooked in?
I'm trying. I haven't heard from either her or Dozer since they went in.
Bink squeezed her comlink.
You think something's happened to them?
I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if we're going to have another rescue mission on our hands.
Bink hissed between her teeth.
I hope to hell not.
Me too. But either way, I think you and I are on our own.
The five armored guards came clumping through the door into the anteroom, to Villachor's simultaneous relief and annoyance. About criffing time.
I want to get into my vault. Those Zeds are in my way. Move them.
Yes, sir.
Usier's filtered voice came from the lead guard.
We'll have them clear in no time.
Villachor threw a sideways look at Barbas and Narkin, still standing silently against the wall, their expressions unreadable. Probably already working out how they were going to report this to their boss. Let them. Let them say anything they wanted. One way or another, Villachor was going to get through this.
Make it fast, he told Usior. Very fast.
Chapter 22.
The game was over, Winter thought distantly. She'd played it well and survived far longer than she'd ever expected. Certainly longer than many of her comrades. But now it was over, and she'd lost. There were at least 30 of them, she estimated numbly, as she watched them pour out of the turbolifts. 30 Imperial stormtroopers, their white armor gleaming brighter than it should have in the garage's muted light, their blaster rifles held ready as they spread with silent efficiency across the garage.
So much for making a run for it, Dozer murmured beside her. At least we know why those other two airspeeders suddenly found somewhere else to be.
Winter looked over her shoulder. Hovering outside the garage entrance, gleaming like the stormtrooper armor in the diffuse city lights, was an Imperial landing craft, Sentinel class, its laser cannons and rotating blasters covering the garage.